From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Thursday, December 22nd, 2016. And on this day, we'll hash out the latest on the proposed new psychiatric hospital in the state. And can't drive 55? You'll still be okay under a proposed change to the speed limit on part of I-295, but you will have to drive 60. That's ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
Governor Paul LePage took to the airwaves of WGAN this morning and announced he's giving up on a site for a new forensic hospital that was planned next to the state's Riverview Psychiatric Center in Augusta. The governor's announcement came just as the two top leaders in the legislature reached agreement on expedited hearings on the facility, which would house patients in state custody who are found not criminally responsible by the courts. Mal Leary has our story.
The governor's change of heart was revealed during an interview with WGAN. When asked about the status of the proposal, the governor said he's looking at other potential locations outside the Capitol area because they do not require legislative approval. The site adjacent to Riverview does. LePage said he hopes to have an alternative site picked next week. He went on to blast Democrats for blocking his efforts to build the 21-bed secure facility.
Well, I don't know why they're just playing games. It's politics as usual, and I just can't afford to risk the general fund money that we so badly need for other programs simply to play games.
At the heart of the issue is the Riverview Psychiatric Center itself. The LePage administration has been drawing down federal funds to help pay for Riverview, but federal regulators said use of those funds was improper because Riverview houses two distinct types of patients: those who have committed violent crimes but who have been found not criminally responsible because of mental illness, and patients committed to the facility through the courts. Without a fix, LePage is worried the state will lose $14 million a year. The two top leaders of the legislature say they recognize the need for the new facility. Senate President Mike Thibodeau, a Republican from Winterport, says he thinks approval of the Augusta site will happen in a matter of weeks and that it makes no sense to change locations.
I have a little bit of background in construction, and usually if you move a site, it takes months to go through a permitting process so hopefully we won't get to that point.
Thibodeau says he and Democratic House Speaker Sarah Gideon have agreed to a joint hearing on the proposal by the legislature's Appropriations and Health and Human Services Committees the first week of January. He says there are members of both parties who have questions about the role of the new facility. Gideon agrees that moving the location will increase the project's cost, and she says the state can't afford to waste money.
His department came in front of the Ledge Council and said if they were to move this to another location, it would cost as much as $1 million additional dollars in taxpayer funds. Additionally, I have no idea how much time it would take to revise plans, go through the planning board process.
Gideon says she does not understand why Governor LePage insists she's trying to reopen the whole thing. She says all she wants to do is ensure proper legislative oversight over state spending. Riverview lost its federal certification in 2013 after regulators uncovered problems ranging from improper record keeping to the use of handcuffs on patients. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services also found that Riverview was improperly housing patients who needed intense hospital treatment with those who no longer needed that level of care. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
A spike in accidents and traffic jams has prompted a state senator to propose lowering the speed limit to 60 miles an hour along a congested stretch of Interstate 295. Senator Rebecca Millett's proposal comes as transportation officials are looking at ways to reduce accidents on that section of highway, which has seen a 20% increase in traffic over the last 2 years and with that, nearly a crash every day. Steve Missler has our story.
Millett, from South Portland, travels 295 at least four times a week during the legislative session. She says the stretch north of Topsom to Gardner is pleasant enough, but between Brunswick and Portland?
By the time I hit Brunswick, Topsom area, my hands ache from gripping the steering wheel because there's so many cars going so fast.
And as Mila concedes, she doesn't experience the worst of it. She's heading north at a time when most of the 295 traffic is heading south, and vice versa.
Oftentimes I look over and they are bumper to bumper backed up because somebody's gone off the road or there's been a little bit of a fender bender, if we're lucky.
So Mila is proposing to reduce the speed limit from 70 miles per hour to 60 miles per hour between Brunswick and Falmouth. The stretch through Portland city limits would remain the same at 50 miles per hour, and the speed limit north of exit 28 in Brunswick would remain 70. 2 years ago, transportation officials hiked the speed limit on 295 to 70 miles per hour after a bill was passed authorizing the increase. Since then, the 52-mile stretch of highway has seen a 20% increase in traffic between 2013 and 2015 and an increase in accidents of more than 30%, according to state crash data. State police and transportation officials say the spike is concentrated between Falmouth and Brunswick, where a cluster of short-distance ramps, high speeds, and traffic elicits driving behavior ranging from terrified to aggressive or reckless to oblivious.
We recognize that there is an increase in the volume of traffic. With that has come an increase in crashes. We have to look at the why.
Maine Department of Transportation spokesman Ted Talbot says the department is undertaking a study to find long-term solutions on 295. In the short term, he says, everything is on the table. That includes reducing the speed limit and signs to update drivers on accidents ahead so they can exit the interstate. Talbot says he'll reserve comment on Millett's proposal until transportation officials can see the bill, which he expects won't be until after the first of the year. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
New England is home to about 400,000 immigrants living and working here without legal status. Federal policy enacted several years ago was supposed to end random deportations of people who are not criminals, but a closer look finds it's commonplace for immigration authorities to ignore those policies. And in the mostly white state of Vermont, advocates are concerned that racial profiling is playing a role. As part of our series Facing Change, VPR's Kathleen Masterson has this story.
Before we hear from the dairy workers, here are two key things to know about immigration law. First, local and state police are not supposed to be acting as immigration authorities. It's not in their purview to figure out what a resident's legal status is. That's the federal agent's job. Second, Department of Homeland Security guidelines make clear that federal immigration authorities are not supposed to deport just anyone who's here illegally. They are to prioritize dangerous criminals. And okay, there's a third thing. Immigration policy is constantly changing. Take the story of Victor Diaz. 25-year-old Diaz has worked on this dairy farm in central Vermont for nearly 3 years. He's one of seven workers from Mexico and Guatemala who help keep the farm running 24 hours a day. Victor takes me to his living quarters. We climb a darkened stairway right next to where the cows are hooked up to milking machines. The air is filled with the acrid smell of manure, combined with the sweet, warm scent of fresh milk. Victor explains he works 12-hour days. The farm milks nearly 1,000 cows, and he's on the night shift.
I come into work at 7:30 p.m. and I leave around 1:30 a.m. And I come back in at 3:30 a.m. until around 10 a.m. In the middle of the night, I have about 2 hours to eat something, sleep for an hour, and then go back to work.
Last year, Victor was pulled over by police and charged with driving under the influence. At the time, he had a driver's privilege card. That's a legal license that both Vermont and Connecticut offer to foreign nationals residing in those states. Diaz pled no contest in county court and paid a $400 fine. He wouldn't say publicly whether he understood that his plea could make him a priority for deportation. Yet 5 months later, Diaz was in Stowe with friends at a Mexican cultural event when he was approached by two agents wearing civilian clothing.
Me dijeron que si yo era José.
They asked me if my name was José. My name is Jose Victor, and I'm used to people calling me Victor, so it seemed strange that they would call me Jose. And I said, yes, I am. Well, we are ICE agents. We are here to arrest you. And then he said, give him my hands, and he handcuffed me and took me to his car.
It's unclear exactly how Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, learned about the DUI. Representatives from ICE declined to comment for this story. But there are basically two ways ICE could have tracked Diaz down. First, when someone is booked by local, county, or state police, his or her fingerprints are submitted to a database run by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and immigration authorities have full access to that info. Second, it's possible that local law enforcement alerted ICE that they pulled over someone who might be in the country illegally. That opens the door to racial profiling, says James Duff Lyle, the executive director of the Vermont ACLU.
Vermont has policy on the books that explicitly limits local law enforcement from participating in immigration enforcement. And yet we are seeing examples of local law enforcement inserting themselves into immigration enforcement in disregard of Vermont state law and also raising serious constitutional and civil rights concerns.
It's not only banned by Vermont state law, but the practice should have stopped 2 years ago when the Obama administration ended the wildly unpopular program called Secure Communities. The program created such rampant distrust of police among community members that many mayors and a few governors announced they would not cooperate with the mandatory federal requirements. So the Department of Homeland Security ended that program and replaced it with guidelines to prioritize people for deportation who are, quote, threats to national security and public safety. But immigration lawyer Enrique Mesa says, in many cases, local law enforcement is still alerting ICE anytime they encounter someone who they suspect is here illegally. Mesa is based in Manchester, New Hampshire, but has clients in both states.
Here in Vermont, that I have seen is that if you are picked up for driving without a license or DUI, the prosecutors or the police will notify ICE.
Mesa says that's not supposed to be happening.
ICE had strict guidelines. You're only supposed to be going after criminals.
Now, a DUI is a deportable offense. It's considered a second-level priority, which falls below a slew of high-priority crimes, including terrorist acts, espionage, and aggravated felonies.
Unfortunately, ever since the election, I've been seeing in my neck of the woods in New Hampshire that even for a simple driving without a license, ICE is just picking people up and just detaining them left and right.
In fact, in New England, anywhere from one-third to one-half of people who ICE issues detainers for, that's a request to local police to hold that person, have no criminal record and have not been arrested before. Miguel Alcudia is one example. He works on the same dairy farm as Diaz in central Vermont, and he was picked up by ICE earlier this year on the grounds that he's living in the country on an expired visa.
It was a Thursday, and I was on my way to the bank to cash my check, but I was detained before I got there. ICE arrested me. But I don't know why, because I'm not a priority to be deported. I'm not a criminal. I came to this country just to work.
Alcudia asked the ICE officers why they were picking him up.
Well, they admitted that someone had called about me. The ICE officer who detained me said he had gotten a call from someone who told them about me.
Both Alcudia and Diaz are awaiting their deportation hearing in front of a judge in the coming months. Like so many in deportation proceedings, their fate rests on the immigration judge's discretion and his or her interpretation of the ever-changing immigration policies. For the New England News Collaborative, I'm Kathleen Masterson.
And that's This Day in Maine for Thursday, December 22nd, 2016. Thanks to Ed Moore and today and to our digital team. I'm Nora Flaherty. Have a wonderful weekend.